Continuing this talk about attention, you possibly think I might have wandered a little bit afield when I discussed attention as being something which did not necessarily need energy or space, but which in this universe was something that took both space and energy, and then described the energy manifestations it took. But the truth of the matter is that a person who is in very, very thorough agreement with the messed universe, of course, has on the messed universe, you would suppose, a fair level of reality. This is really not the case if he agrees just to an exactly optimum degree. If the flow of agreement is quite optimum, he can perceive this messed universe very beautifully. But if he goes above or below that, his perception of it starts to fade out. Below an optimum level of agreement with the messed universe, he is too much on the side of matter to see it, having too little attentional direction, residual. And above that level, he is too capable of creating to bother much about perceiving what has been created unless he has an interest in exchanging creations with some other thetan, for instance. Matter of fact, thetans quite customarily very early on the track, and probably now it's probably starting again after all these trillions of years, sit around and mock up something, and the other fellow says, oh, I can mock up better than that, and they both look at it. And they have to be in a level of agreement with each other in order to swap these illusions. It's about the same pastime that cowboys have on the Western Plains, swapping lies. Where you have lots of space, and where space is cheap, truth isn't very vital. But where you have very, very little space, truth becomes of a tremendous importance. And of course, any place from 4 down on the tone scale, an individual is getting so immersed into matter that his road out of matter into a more volatile, usable, and higher powered state is by backtracking the agreements which got him into that state. In other words, backtracking his attention. What's he given his attention to? That thing to which a person gives an interested level of attention, he validates. He makes it true. That individual who gives a tremendous velocity of attention to something invalidates it, which makes it untrue. Now, a tremendous outflow then of agreement says no, and a tremendous outflow on the part of a thetan, in terms of perception, sees right straight on through walls, towns, planets, so on. It just ceases to exist. He starts this directional flow. Now, when he gets it back in return, he is invalidated. In other words, he's hit by force, and he lets it come in. Now, if he lets it come in and just sort of absorbs it, He's stuck. The thing to do is, when a big lot of force is coming in, is to kind of shift the rules of the game a little bit and just go up a notch or two on the wave band. And look at the flowers instead of hear the train whistle. And do you know you can do that? You can actually do that. If there's something happening, a lot of energy is flowing towards you that you don't particularly like, and so on, you can simply fix your attention on another perceptic level. You see, perception means distinguishment. It would mean distinguishment of energy in the messed universe. And it would be, on a higher level than that, distinguishment of intention. Now, very simple for a person to distinguish elsewhere than he is intended to distinguish. 1-5 says, you've got to listen to me, you've got to stand there, and so forth. Actually, you can stand straight in front of 1-5. Your body will get hit by a lot of energy flow and wrapped up and stopped and that sort of thing. But as a Thetan, you could stand right square in front of a 1-5 with a tremendous outpour of wrathful sound and think about the flowers. And what do you know? You've probably all done that one way or the other. You thought about something else. You just shifted it, and the energy went on by. And when one loses the ability to select which part of the tone band or which part of the wave scale he is going to validate, pay attention to, or distinguish, when one loses that ability, the poor fellow can be very easily controlled, because anybody can select then, and he is no longer able to select. That's a bad state. But as long as he's able to select, let's say he's a Thetan there, and somebody shoots 100 trillion megavolts at him in some fashion or another, and he decides at that moment to see green. There's no green in the 100 trillion megavolts. He'll never get hit. Right? He shifted his attention. He doesn't care to distinguish the other, and so it misses him. It goes through him. Most of your trouble comes in here on Earth very simply. And that is, with a body, you haven't any choice but to stop a wave. A wave is leveled at you, you stop it. It'll hit you. If a fellow fires a bullet at you, you don't choose at that moment to be at the wave band of cosmic rays, and you'll get hit by the bullet. If you did choose to be at the wave band of cosmic rays, believe me, your body hasn't. And this body is in very definite agreement with the mesh universe, whether you are or not. Now, true enough, as a Thetan, you can protect this body, and there's where you kind of got into trouble. Because you keep throwing screens out here and stopping things. If you had lots of horsepower, unimaginable here on Earth, a Thetan who had this much horsepower would just tear a body to pieces. I mean, he couldn't stay in one. The body would just char. But if he could theoretically have enough horsepower that somebody fires a rifle bullet at him and he just sort of puts out his hand and catches it, it wouldn't hit, or he could deflect it. But he could do worse than that. He could take the rifleman who was firing the bullet and have the rifleman blow his own brains out. That would be on an intentional level. He would have enough intentional power, and he could extend enough space so as to include in his space the person who was doing the thing, and the person who was doing the thing, being not in his own space, would not be able to think his own thought and would have to think some other thought. Very quick. That is what's known as changing somebody's mind. Now, you've tried to change people's mind, and if you don't have lots of horsepower, it's pretty hard to change somebody's mind just by saying, I want their mind to be changed. But actually, if you've got a lot of, if you can manufacture space and you manufacture energy, you theoretically could just sit down and say, let me see, Joe's intention will now be, you think about Joe. Well, now, just to think about Joe doesn't mean to put up some kind of a mess communication line to him. It would be to include Joe in your space. You would just put some space between you and Joe and include you in, and Joe would feel groggy for a moment, and this space line would have the intention in it of so-and-so that you want Joe to do. And if Joe were very down horsepower, he would not be aware of this. He would probably stay statically, step right there on that band, and he would have that intention. He would even think it was his own intention. You see? You become a very dangerous person. I don't know whether I'll tell you any more or less or not. Now, this is thought transference. And by the way, the actuality of thought transference, ESP, you could strain yourself to pieces trying to do ESP. You could just strain yourself to pieces. It's just nonsense to try it in a mess body. What do you succeed in doing? You succeed in emanating or pulling in some energy which will dislodge one of your ridges, and then the next thing you know, you're in apathy about the whole thing. And even if you could do it for a month or two, about 3 months or 6 months or a year at the most, or maybe 2 years at the most, you wouldn't be able to do it anymore. You'd just have caved in enough ridges to have altered this characteristic. You'd have altered the ridge pattern around you. And sure enough, let's look in this universe and see if we find any evidence to corroborate that. And we find out that fortune tellers usually go to pieces in at the outside 3 years. And ESP is something being studied by Ryan. Ryan has done some wonderful things on prediction, clairvoyance, and so forth. There's a chair of nixy noxy nihil pilification. That means belittling. A chair of nixy noxy nihil pilification. You didn't think I pronounced it twice, did you? That is set up at Berkeley and was specially endowed for the sole purpose of invalidating anybody who tried to validate anything in the subject of psychic research. And that's right, that's the endowment of the chair. And the fellow who occupies that chair sits there all the time and figures out experiments that prove that Ryan is wrong. So he figured out one day, he said, that the best thing we could possibly do here is to prove Ryan completely wrong, and that is by putting up a big bunch of hemispheres, parabolic mirrors. And we put up these parabolic mirrors in such a way that the whisper, the unconscious throat motions and whispers of the subject will then be relayed and magnified and directed squarely into and concentrated upon the ear of the person who is doing the receiving. And this will prove conclusively, he says, setting it all up in advance, you see, setting up what he's going to prove and then proving nothing else but that. This will prove conclusively that a person whose, quote, mind is being read, unquote, will then have, when he has these unconscious lip motions, which nobody else ever observed, by the way, and he has these unconscious, it shows that that is really sound, and that sound goes into this parabolic mirror and it goes back over here and it goes into the fellow's ear. And this proves conclusively that it was unconscious lip motion that did that. So he did that, and what do you know? The incidence of readings picked way up. He bettered Ryan's figures. And then he wrote a big paper on it, long, nauseous affair, published in the something or other journal of something or other. It was published someplace or other, and a lot of people write in there so that the stuff doesn't have to be read broadly. And that's the most astonishing thing in the world. This fellow wasn't enough up on the subject of energy to know that energy is directional at high wavelengths. Your television is so directional that it won't bend over the horizon over here. But you start a television wave going at that level of the tone band, and it just keeps on going. It goes right straight on out. It doesn't curve over the horizon. All our television, poor fellows on the moon, all of our television can arrive on the moon because there's really enough punch to kick it up there, but it can't bend over the horizon a few hundred miles away, and so it isn't heard over there or isn't seen. Very directional. And you can take radar, and you can take a mirror with radar, and you can deflect this mirror all over the place, just like you do with light. You take mirrors. All these waves operate much in that same fashion, and not only on sound. What he possibly was doing was taking the energy impulse of the person whose mind was being read, and it was going out in an energy flow, and he was busy concentrating. According to the experimental write-up, he was concentrating exactly on the thetan of the person who was perceiving it. And of course he'd get better. Of course he'd get much better results. So if he proved anything, he proved Ryan's results could be bettered. And I'm very happy that he did that. All right, because I was able to make a couple of little tiny experiments along this line, and it caused me to ask the question, I wonder if it's because they have television sets for sale, I wonder if that is the reason no human beings ever suddenly decide to see and hear television? See, theoretically, there's no reason why you couldn't suddenly decide to hear television or radio and perceive it. And, corroborating evidence, there are several cases on record of somebody getting very hysterical because just this started to happen. And many dentists have been approached by people who kept hearing radio programs. And they would get some amalgam in their teeth or something of the sort, you see, and it all had to be worked out structurally. And the silver in their teeth would something or other, and they'd report in suddenly the dentist's office and say, you've got to change the fillings in my teeth or pumice them down somehow or other because I keep hearing Station Rinso, and I just can't stand any more of this dirty white talk. And here would be a plight. But there wasn't any reason why. You see, Homo sapiens gets on these bands sort of fixed because the body says you can only see on the sight band and hear on the sound band and feel on the feel band and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's all a matter of attention. Where do you cast the wavelength of attention? Where do you select the attention to travel, in what direction or income? Now, that would be agreement. What part of the wave band do you select? Of course, as I just said first, would be that communication channel you were selecting. Actually, there's no multiplicity of channels. You've got a channel. It's a gradient scale of one channel, evidently. Now, on the matter of, do I choose to perceive ridges, flows, or dispersals? And do I intend to put my intention out in ridges, flows, or dispersals? Now, if a fellow can't have this power of choice anymore, he can't monitor his attention adequately. He gets in bad shape. And take a little kid. The people have an awful time getting Johnny's attention. Awful time. Oh, they have to slap him and spank him and shake him and do a lot of things in order to get Johnny to pay some attention. Well, what are they doing when they're doing this? Or making loud noises or shouting at Johnny or telling him so on. What are they doing? They're trying to set up a fixed communication channel. They aren't just trying to get his attention. They're trying to set up a fixed communication channel which will thereafter become automatic. That is the intention of demanding Johnny's attention. They want a fixed channel. And Papa wants a fixed channel, quite ordinarily, and Mama wants a fixed channel, and Big Brother, Big Sister want fixed channels, and the school teacher wants fixed channels. And a lot of other people in the community want fixed channels, and they get this fellow pretty well fixed. You know, unless you've seen one of these things, you hardly believe it at all, but a preacher gets out of his body, he wants to know, what are all these lines that are hooked onto me? Well, you say, well, why don't you take one end of them and take it over to the tap and pull off the other one and so on, and he'll say, well, I can't budge this line. Well, who does it go to? I don't know. Kind of seems like my father or something. Well, throw it to where your father is now. Well, he's dead. Well, throw it to where he is now. Oh, well, all right. You just pitch it out someplace. You say, it went taut. And you say, all right, now pry your end off. And I'll pull his end off and throw it away. And he's very curious. You rarely take time enough to say, now look, that was a fixed communication channel. Somebody really got that one set up on you. Now, if the terminal was vacated, you've got two terminals. You have two terminals. One is the individual. And here's the channel fixed. And it went out here to this other individual here. It's like stringing a telephone line. And it's a live line. And it'll be as live as long as there's a thetan
Here?
To keep it energized. That thetan perpetually keeps it energized. You can play a dirty trick as a thetan. I shouldn't tell you this. I really shouldn't. But, well, anyway, sooner or later you'll discover this, that you actually, theoretically, could grab hold of some Homo sapiens and pick up Mama's line and throw it on your own body. You could just take a look at him and pick up Mama's line and hook it over here to your own body. Make it strut. He'll obey you. He'll really do what you say. No kidding. You are suddenly inheriting all the benefit of, Johnny, I told you to wipe your shoes. Johnny, what are you doing with a dirty face? Johnny, what are you doing this? What are you doing that? That's all on the line. That line's all tuned in for that. And what do you know? Johnny has no control over the income. He can't control what comes in over that line. He's lost his selectivity on that particular line. Supposing you had a telephone and the ration board spoke 24 hours a day in telling you what commodities would be and what commodities wouldn't be and all the rest of this, and they spoke for 24 hours a day, and they had a fixed line into your telephone receiver, so that any time you tried to listen to the telephone receiver, all you would hear would be, and the sugar is going to be rationed coming the 3rd of September, and it will only be 2 quarts per spigot, and so on, and it went on like this, you would eventually kind of tune this out. You could use that telephone if this went on. But it's right back there, kind of a dim rumble. It's back there someplace. If you'd suddenly, occasionally, after you tuned it out and said it wasn't there, you'd adjusted to it and so on, every once in a while you'd get a little shock that you'd sort of hear that coming through. You would have difficulty hearing to whom you were speaking and so on. But it could exist. It could coexist on the same band, and you could select it out. That's what has Westinghouse engineers, and GE is almost gone mad over this. Why is it that the human binaural hearing system selects out sound so beautifully, and when you put it on a mechanical speaker, it doesn't? You hear very nicely on binaural hearing, but for some peculiar reason, as I talk here live to you, my voice goes on that. Later on, you'll hear this tape again, and it won't sound clear. It'll have all sorts of background noise on it. That's because your ear right now is selecting out all other sound or selecting in some other sound. And when that tape is taken, it just takes it flat. And you've got just one channel. Now, if I sat here with two microphones and there were two tapes playing at the same time, your ear could reselect again. That's wonderful. Quite remarkable. It's just the fact that the thetan can take from a couple of different directions and sum the main channel and then pay attention to the main channel. But if there are a lot of other channels hooked into the main channel, he begins to have trouble. But you would be surprised at how much noise you select off one of these tapes when you hear it playing. If you were to put a decibel meter up, it'll be incomprehensible to you how you heard it at all. You've got a channel here, and it's a fixed channel. Well, the person hears noise, interference, and other things over that channel to the exact degree that he's unable to monitor what comes in. Now, you want to know why some people get nervous on account of noise. It's because whenever noise starts coming in, everything comes in. They have lost their ability to monitor. Therefore, they must have been subjected to enormous quantities of chatter and persiflage from the family and so forth right here in this lifetime. There must have been a lot of noise. And they've gotten to a point where they can't monitor because they've got a lot of these fixed attention lines. And they actually are hearing through these fixed attention lines. You want to know what one of the actual manifestations of transfer is? Is here is your preflear, and over here, with the line going to him, was Papa. That was Papa. And then the preclear met somebody who reminded him of Papa, and Papa was gone now, so he just shifted this line straight to the other person. Anybody who shows up that even vaguely resembles Papa's voice tones or appearance or mannerism, particularly manners of speech, will get that line. And he will pay the same amount of obedience to that person that he paid to Papa. Now, those are channels. Those are fixed channels. And they actually exist on people as cables visible to the Thetan. We're not talking about anything esoteric. We're talking about something you could probably unhook from a preclear and play jump rope with. It's just that you haven't got your perception tuned to take a look at them. But right now, as you sit there, there isn't any reason why you couldn't suddenly tune it. But remember that if you get it on, don't be startled and to turn it off again. It's just a band you're not accustomed to looking at, that's all. Now, that's terminal of attention. An attention line has to have two terminals in order to flow. Now, if that line has been harsh enough from Papa over here to the preclear, it disperses. Anything that comes over it disperses any attention the preclear may have. It just blows his attention apart. Anytime anybody like Papa talks to him, he can't concentrate on anything. He's just a mass of confusion. And this person goes away, and now he can't make up his mind. But 2 or 3 minutes goes by, and he says, why the dickens did I agree to buy that Renzo? Why did I do this? Why did I do that? Why didn't I just tell him to go to the devil? Now I've got myself all committed with this and all committed with that, and I'm all upset because of it. That's because incoming matter dispersed his attention. His attention was fixed. So anything that came over the fixed line could disperse it. Now let's see another condition operating here. Let's see. Here's your preclear, and here's his attention line going over here to another person. And let's say that he has this line just fixed on bodies in general. When they talk, he listens. Everybody's got that set up. And he's got his attention fixed. And all of a sudden, a giant firecracker goes off right behind him. Well, his attention's got to be yanked off of this terminal, and it's got to be put out all directions here in order to locate and stop the incoming blast from the firecracker. His attention is fixed and it disperses. Now, how did they get this line fixed in the first place? Here's little Johnny. Summer day, everything going along beautifully, looking at the birds and the bees and the other kids and wondering how he's going to beat up the little boy next door. And he's enjoying life. And all of a sudden, he hears, Johnny! Only he might hear it much louder than that. I just have respect for your ears. His attention's clear out here, see? Big sphere of attention. It's dispersed, but very generally dispersed. He's feeling good. All of a sudden, this word, Johnny, comes from here. He, into this dispersal, enters a line. Boom. And he goes right back on that line and charges it. He'll fix his attention suddenly, and he'll fix it so suddenly he practically packs it into the state of being matter. He actually sets up a line, a real line. Now, if his mother customarily, or if the traffic customarily, or if everything else customarily blasts at him suddenly when his attention is dispersed, the first thing you know, he can't unhook his attention to get it out to look at how beautiful days are. He does nothing but sit at the incoming side of all these communication lines and pick up what comes back of them. That's a heck of a note, isn't it? He has no self-determinism with regard to his attention, because any one of these lines can be energized, and his attention has been smashed in to a line form so often and so frequently that he can't free it. So he just sort of hangdog. He gets nervous. He's fixed. He's too fixed. After all, by the way, he tries to concentrate on a book he's reading. and a pin drops a block away, he can't pay any more attention to the book. He's got to be up to that pin. He goes back to the book again, and somebody sneezes in the next room. And right away his attention, that line goes live, and his attention goes off the book. We could say that we're dealing then with a gradient scale of attention. If there are a finite amount of attention which could be concentrated, that would be one thing. But there isn't. Very fortunately, it isn't a finite amount of attention. It's practically infinite. But a fellow gets down to this basis. He is as able to act and handle energy as he has free attention. He is as able to act and handle energy as he has free attention. And what freezes his attention, and when we say a frozen or fixed attention or a permanently dispersed attention, would be that percentage, you might say, of his attention which is no longer under his determinism but is under the determinism of others. And if you've ever seen a football, it doesn't care who kicks it. And matter, the characteristic of matter is it has no selection of attention. No selection of attention. It retains it sometime in its innate form, such as sodium. Sodium pays quick attention to water. You put water on sodium, and sodium goes boom. It's a real big dispersal. It takes place. All right, there's an interesting situation, because there's a line in building. Person's attention all fixed, and then all of a sudden, bang. What's an accident? Fellow's going along, he's enjoying the scenery, and all of a sudden a car runs into him from in front or behind or something. When you process that as an assist, what are you doing? You are unfixing his attention upon the chaotic income of motion in the accident, and you are unfixing an attention which was so fixed as to cause physical pain. What is physical pain? It is a chaotic income of attention being met by an effort to block the attention sufficient to overcome the blocking attention. That's what pain is. Happens to be a certain vibration level, too. And pain is composed, of course, of heat, cold, and electricity. It has three component sensations. When you run out somebody's pain, if you don't get all three of those, you haven't got all the pain out. When you don't get all the three of those out of a somatic or an effort, you haven't got all the pain out. All right. You're unfixing attention which is too fixed, or you are trying to refix and repair attention which is too dispersed. The reason a psychotic starts to disassociate is because they can't fix their attention on anything. And they have no attention under their control, and they cannot fix it. The reason why you're paranoid, generally, is paranoid is because he's got his attention so fixed on fighting something back that he can't unfix it long enough to look at or perceive anything else. So you have those two conditions resulting. The too fixed variety is computational. It leads to computations. The fellow thinks up this, and he thinks up that, and he thinks up something else. Well, usually, they're quite connected. They're usually too connected. If anything, they're packed too tight, you might say these thoughts are. The logic goes in too painfully precise a series of steps. Oh, it is too painfully precise. It's packed too close. Now, continuing this on attention, if we have here a series of lines, you should see very easily that they ought to follow the behavior of lines. If you have, for instance, two terminals and you have a line between them, and there's a different potential on the two terminals, you'll get a directional flow over this line. It's just a line. It's like a piece of wire. It And this material you're handling is energy. And energy is higher manifestation of wavelength, electricity, or something of the sort. It can be conduited. It's quite surprising to a preclear. He thinks that, well, all this is imaginary as he starts to disconnect this line, and that's imaginary. And all of a sudden, he gets a somatic that practically tears the side of his head off. Oh, no, he said. You say, well, go on, grab the next line. And he say, no, I'm not going to have anything to do with that line. We'll get a little piece of it. So he'll gingerly start to take it off like a kid trying to remove adhesive plaster from a sprained wrist. And he'll take it off, and you get these little jumping somatics. Yeah, okay, I got that one. I got that one. Yeah, got that one. Oh, he's disabused of the unreality of the situation. Now, what else can happen here? Here we have this tension fixed on Papa. Tension's fixed very solidly on Papa. Papa's used this as a line by which to command your preclear. There's a lot of ridges and everything else along this communication line by now. Things the preclear perceives get plastered on these ridges. There's whole banks full of facsimiles. If he were to adjust his depth of vision, if he were to be able to look at the ridge he has out here and is holding out here, he could look at that ridge, he could see the facsimiles on it. Now he can select, and he can select other facsimiles on it because the facsimiles stick to the ridges. So the incoming lines with ridges on them means that when current flows along that line, it'll hit these ridges and activate the facsimiles. Actually, it's idiotically simple how a facsimile goes into re-stimulation. It's just a picture on a piece of energy, and when energy hits it, the picture goes into action. It's a very clever way to make motion pictures. Only sometimes preclears who have had somatics for 20 years don't find it entertaining. Now, this line which came from Papa then is not a nice smooth job, and it's got a lot of ridges and bumps and so forth on it. And what do you know? He's fought back at it a lot of places. And every place he fought back, there's a ridge. His flow went out and met Papa's flow, and that kind of jammed the line a little bit and distorted it. So Lord knows what'll come over that line. You say boy to this preclear. If you remind him of Papa, you say boy to him. He'll say, well, no, I don't have very much to do with dogs. That's about as close as he gets to what you're saying. It can actually be that bad, but he talks to somebody else perfectly rationally. And everything you say to him, it's sort of boom. Now, let's say Papa died. Papa died. First thing you know, you have an end of terminal vacated. You can put that down as a very important little piece of information. That is called end of terminal. And it has a wider name than that. It's end of terminal processing. Find out all the people on whom you would expect to have grief charges, the people he has lost. And that can include the people he has commanded, the servants, the nurses, the this-is, the that-is, the anything. Anything human that's been around this person that could have had an authoritative over which he had an authoritative atmosphere, or which had authority over him. Let's just find these people, and then let's just set out and locate all those terminals. Now, what do you know? This hip. His Aunt Agatha had a bad hip, and Aunt Agatha up and died, and he's had a bad hip ever since, and you keep solving this life continuum. You just keep solving it, and you keep solving it. And you say, am I never going to get this bad hip? It must be somebody else. Oh, no, it's Aunt Agatha's. Because, you see, when Aunt Agatha bullied him around, he wanted to prove to Aunt Agatha he was more powerful than she, so he desired to help her. And he finally wanted to help her by patching up this hip. And when Aunt Agatha died, he took the end of the terminal and put it on his own hip. So you want to investigate these somatics from the standpoint of end of terminal, because it's not only on him once, but the thing is coiled around and is on him twice, and he's got both ends to the cord, both ends to the line. Now, this is terribly re-stimulated because there is such a thing as the umbilical cord. And you start getting this fellow cutting lines, and the next thing you know, why, he's... He's liable to get birth a bit re-stimulated. so on. So you want to have him in pretty good shape before you have him romping around doing too much of this sort of thing. It's interesting. You see, he was once connected to Mama. He knows that's physically possible, and that possibly gave these later lines more credence. It's fascinating. Now, what happens here is you've got both ends of the communication line are on the preclear himself. And he is being two different people at the same time. And when you start to smash through communications, as per technique 80, smash through communications to an injured portion of a person's being, the probability is you're trying to bypass one of these old channels. You're trying to go straight from the thetan to the hip instead of from the thetan to the right ear, out to where Mama used to be, and back to the hip. You see, you're trying to make a short new line. And where you can make a short new line, you bypass the old line, it sort of discharges. Now, therefore, you have two types of people. Roughly, you have the computational, or the two fixed attention, and then you have the dispersed person. And the funny part of it is you can have these two characteristics in the one person. He just flips from using the two fixed lines to the dispersal. He has them both. Oh, it's interesting trying to process a preclear who is in a major dispersal. Very interesting. You try to get this preclear to move around any, or move a ridge around any, and the first time they shake anything, they get into a flow, and they jump up and light a cigarette. You say, well, let's take that. Well, I think they had enough processing for the moment. I want to smoke anyway, and so on and so on. And you finally get them back down again, and you say, all right, now let's see if you can put a line out to, well, I think that's probably about enough for tonight. What's happening? This poor character is moving. He's sitting in the midst of this big burst, you see. His line's going out in all directions. He's dispersed all over the place. And every time you get him to move even faintly inside this sphere of a burst, you activate it. And it starts to flow. See, the picture doesn't flow until he hits it with fresh energy. It just stays there, kind of sits there. And all of a sudden he hits it with some fresh energy and trying to move around or think or something of the sort on a certain subject. That reactivates the dispersal. He feels this energy going past him, as I was showing with these iron filings. He just feels that energy going past him. He can't tune off of it, and it scares him. So his first impulse is to get out. He'll do one of two things. He'll get out or he'll hold on. If he is so close that the second he feels a dispersal, he has to hold on, the chances are he'll get annoyed with you or mad. The preclear who's getting consistently mad with you every time you try to process him is simply starting a dispersal, usually from the back of the head, past the thetan, and is then having to hold on instantly. And, of course, when you're, hold on, that's mad. He's angry. So he feels fear, anger, in order to come up tone scale. And, of course, he can feel fear, say, oh, no, I'm not supposed to feel fear. And so it must be antagonism or something of the sort, and he grabs right a hold right quick in order to stop this. Well, he doesn't do that but a few times, then you'll have him in grief because that's the next hold down. And usually should go, you see, from fear down to grief. And there's a dispersal that he hits along that level. If he's in grief and you shake him up on this energy, he's in apathy. If you want to really see something, you want to see the speed with which a preclear who is in fairly good condition can all of a sudden turn into a complete apathy state. And apathy is really something. It's a terrific apathy. Hey, pick up your arm, drop him, that's all. It just becomes so much matter, no will. And yet a few minutes before, he was in pretty good condition. What have you done? You've taken his attention and you've rattled him. You've given him two or three orders, one after the other, without letting him follow any one of these orders. And then you've shaken him up and confused him, and he was doing something else. And you attracted his attention in some other way. In other words, you kept monkeying up his attention, fooling it around, and he's precariously balanced in his head against a flow. And the second he starts to let go, he can't hold on again because his attention gets too dispersed. When his attention gets too dispersed, the flow starts and boom, he goes into apathy. And it may take him an hour or two to recover, but he will recover. because he's not a chronic apathy case. But he doesn't feel too good about it. He doesn't think you're so hot as an auditor. The way you correct that, I repeat, is just never give a pre-clear another command until you are sure that he has either been able to do or has not been able to do the command you just gave him. In other words, let him complete one action at a time. The way his parents, if he's in terribly bad shape, you almost know exactly what his parents did to him. They never let him complete an action. They never let him complete a cycle of action. Now, one of the things that life tries to do is complete a cycle of action. Creation, growth, conservation, decay, and death. And it tries to complete that cycle of action. All actions have a cycle. And if you start in on that cycle and get interrupted on that cycle, it's very upsetting. Attention, dispersal, or fixation occurs whenever people continually try to upset a natural cycle. Now, that happens with an order. You give him an order, and before he can complete it and finish out the cycle of action, it's quite an important theory, by the way, cycle of action, but it's become, it's terribly important, and it's a grain of sand in what we're doing now. You get the idea? You can take this whole theory of the cycle of action, you can explain cell growth, you can do this, oh, it's wonderful, technology rolls out of this in all directions. I just punch it up and give it one comment in passing, because the truth of the matter is it's not that important. It's applies the field of biology and, oh, I don't know, clarifies this, that, so on. Just let me mention in passing so it won't get lost to you. Cycle of action. An organism, it tends to persist on a cycle once that cycle has begun. It tends to persist, and it gets upset only when it's changed in its persistence by factors outside of it. And what are we looking at? We're looking at Newton's law of inertia. An organism, or a life, or a thing, tends to remain in a state of rest until acted upon by exterior forces, tends to continue in a state of motion until acted upon by other forces. In other words, the other forces give him new problems. That's why he needs new randomity in order to stay in motion. All right, cycle of action. And here we have the person having started to do an action, and then having somebody change their mind. And then he started to do an action, and somebody changes his mind. Do an action, somebody changes his mind. Do an action, and all of a sudden, boom, he'd go into apathy. The soldier probably could charge through battle and be shot quite painfully and sent to the hospital and cured up and sent back on the field of battle, and he'd charge in the next battle and he'd feel perfectly good about it, and he'd be shot and he'd sent back to the base hospital again, and he'd get to the battle and he would charge quite, not quite so happily, and he gets shot, and he gets sent back to the base hospital again, and then they'd set him up to charge, and he'd just sit there on the parapet. He'd say, to hell with this. His cycle of action each time was supposed to be, he's supposed to jump off the parapet, go across this field, and do something to the enemy. He never did. He just kept starting. If you want to get three-dimensional vision on your pre-clear, just get him to get the concept of starting something. And he'll get three-dimensional vision. His world will open up. He's got space. Because the cycle is, when he starts something, he is free in this universe. And then his space starts to contract on him as the thing becomes more solidly fixed. And as more fixed it becomes, the less he can alter its course until at last he reaches the point of destruction. A boy of 5 can alter his life in almost any direction. A boy of 15 has a little more difficulty doing so. A fellow at 25 doing a wild change in his life course is quite upset. And a fellow of 40 is pretty badly upset. And don't let a failure hit somebody of 60. Because they're too fixed on that course, and that dispersal throws them instantly into apathy if it's a big, major failure. Big failure. You take people, when you're processing them, older people, you must remember that they don't change readily because they dare not. If you can theta clear them, pop them outside and so forth, because they can change all over the place, because they might as well be a boy of 5. All right. Now, fixed and unfixed attention, then you see, explains and does a great deal for you in any type of processing. Because what can you do? you can't get anything else on this pre-clear. You can say, just get the idea of being your attention spread around, all around, and very easy with the world, and then all of a sudden, fixed. You say, just do that again. Fixed. Okay? Do it again. Fixed. And you say, my God, my father's face. I've never had a visi on my father before. You've got him looking right straight down that communication conduit. Right straight at the ridge that you're trying to locate. You want to know where this pre-clear stuck on the track? Get his attention dispersed and get it fixed. Now, get his attention fixed and make him disperse it. Get his attention fixed, make him disperse it. Get his attention fixed, make him... Here I am in the middle of that railroad wreck, he'll say. You see why? Get the mechanism of that. His attention is fixed. He's looking at something. He's probably reading a book, something, sitting on a railroad train, and all of a sudden, another engine runs into his engine. So, of course, his attention just flies out all over the place, and he is trying to gather it up, but he is too shocked to gather it up, and he remains in a dispersed state. Now, he could actually loaf around there on the time track for some time. There might be considerable pain there and so on. This engram might be carrying right along forward with him. This is nice as you please. So if you say, all right, get your attention fixed on something, let's just get your attention. What would you like to fix your attention on? Well, I don't know. Well, a book. All right, get your attention fixed on a book. Be reading the book, and all of a sudden, feel your attention just fly out in all directions. You'll say, yeah, I can feel that. Do it again. Fly out in all directions. Do it again. Fly out in all directions. What's he going to get out of this bundle of energy? He's probably going to get the crash of the locomotive. See, he never had sonic before. He stopped it right there. His attention is so dispersed, he is not in control. And dispersed attention means not in control. And fixed attention means being controlled. You want optimum mobility of attention in your pre-clear. And one of the things you're working for is optimum mobility of attention. And why does theta clearing do so much for people? Well, why when you really get your theta clear out, and by the way, there isn't any doubt about this. I mean, he doesn't, maybe I am or maybe I'm not. If maybe I am, maybe I am, maybe I am. He needs some more work. That's all. Because there isn't any question about it. No question about you sitting in those chairs. Well, there's certainly no question about when you're sitting on the ceiling or plastered against the other side of the moon or wherever you happen to spring to the second that you got outside. No, not much question about this. Very interesting. All right. In observing, then, your pre-clear, if you were to look at him theta-wise, the outside of your body is an auditor, and look at his body, you would just see him as a mass of wires, and not masses of wires, masses of conduits, and maybe a thing looked like a banana going from this ear around to the back of his head here, and another thing under his chin and up to here. They look horrible. I mean, you start tuning up to their communication bands, and you say, what has this person been communicating with? Well, it must be a combination between a tar machine and a feather merchant. And it probably has something to do with having been dumped into a pillow factory or somebody working on him with plaster of Paris. They look strange. After you've seen him that way a couple of times, you could turn it off again. Well, the first time it happens to you, if you happen to look at people and see them just like that, say, I wonder why I can't see ridges on other people. Let's see, can I see? I think I'll see some ridges on other people, and boom! Then you can't get them off. You can say, the heck of a note. You've gone into communication with their ridge setup, which is all communication, of course. Well, don't be worried about it. They sometimes becomes a little worried about this. Just decide not to see them. Off they go. You see, a thetan can change his mind because he doesn't have a network of communications which he is the unwitting center to keep him from changing his mind. Because when his attention is too fixed or his attention is too dispersed, or it alternates from being too fixed to too dispersed, how can he change his mind? Other things can change his mind with force. Other things can't, but he can't change his mind. His mind is fixed. Fixed by what? Or it's dispersed. Dispersed by what? Other channels, which can be just mildly energized and feel like a 16-inch gun barrage. There's lots of residual energy in matter, particularly the wavelengths that you're fooling with around a person. A lot of residual energy. Now, you take the back of a person's head and their back. Now, I hate to introduce such a term as an electronic vacuum, but you could suppose that such a thing existed. Now, I was telling you the other night, you put out this wave flow out this way. The thing will get out there and get stuck. One-way flow. A one-way flow, flowing too long, gets stuck. It's interesting on the part of Homo sapiens that he's all one-way flow as a body. Nobody ever designed this body to do anything else but flow one way. It is the most wonderful piece of misdesign in terms of energy. What? Eyes? Inflow. Inflow. Ears? Inflow. Inflow. Mouth? Nothing but outflow except for food, which is inflow. But that's on another wavelength. That's on the wavelength of matter. Now, we have anything this body is doing has a one-way flow. Well, that's a heck of a note, because all those flows get stuck, and the person becomes aberrated along any of these channels then. And that's why you have the Freudian fixation upon some of these things. And if you start solving Freud on, let's solve one-way flows for the body, bang. You can clean up a case Freud-wise probably in an hour, a few hours, a couple hours. Somebody just told me, one of our auditors just mentioned that he had taken the various manifestations of Freud, picked them up immediately, and cleaned them up in a case in a couple of hours, just showing that they could be attained. Not that they did any good to clean them up particularly, but just showing that they could be attained, and the manifestations knocked out in a couple of hours of the processing with the techniques which we're using now. We didn't have to fish for them on free association or anything, that they were there. And it was interesting that they were there, and it was also interesting we'd obtain them so fast in a pre-clear who was not indoctrinated in either psychoanalysis or Scientology. They're one-way flows, you see. Now, that's true of lots of communication lines. A one-way flow is a bad thing to have, but it's also easy to handle. Because after a communication line has flowed, all you have to do is sort of shake it up, and it has enough residual spring in it that it'll straighten out. After you've talked for hours, after I've talked, for instance, classes here, day in and day out, all I do is, as far as the body is concerned, all I do is shake up the sound flow and the air resistance and so on in front of my face. And it springs back. You don't run it out as such. Or if I've talked for quite a while, something like that is just unhook it. Just use it as a strip of energy. And just unhook it and throw it outside or something of the sort. The body isn't quite as able in handling these things as it might be. And it tends to get stuck on this. All right, you as auditors, as students here, listen to these tapes. On and on and on, you have a tendency to get a fixed flow. A very grave tendency, and as a matter of fact, the horrible part of it is you wind up resenting the other end of the flow because you're trying to stop it, because you're realizing as a one-way flow that it's going one way and that one-way flows are, at best, non-survival. So the first thing you know, you say, well, all this material's probably all right, but Hubbard, gee, he's horrible. I mean, you'll get tape happy after a while, too. But the information is there, and it's just because you haven't been sufficiently in control of sound. Now, how do you handle this? Well, you process it. Actually, your instructor can process this for you and should every once in a while. On his talk and so on, just to shake up this one-way income flow. You don't have to shake it up very much to have it blow. All of a sudden, it'd be a horrible pain in your ears or something of the sort. You just blown these ridges. They're sort of energy patterns that are stretched over the eardrums, or you're arresting it right outside the eardrums, and you shake it up, and you feel it go rip. You don't have to run out all these words. And there, you see, is essence of what we are doing, which is an advance over Dianetics. That's why Scientology works so fast. You handle stuff as energy, not as specific perceptics. You tear up a couple of billion years of aberration and tie a knot in it and say to the preclear, now can you tie a knot in? No, I can't tie a knot in. Can you bend it? Yes, I can bend it. All right, now can you tie a knot in? Yes, I can tie a knot in it. All right, that's fine. Now wrap it around a couple of ridges. That's just fine. Now take it outside and bury it. Okay, I've done that. Now how do you feel about women? Yes, it's very simple. You'd be surprised at the amount of change this can make in a preclear. You take now attention. The intention of direction of flow is very interesting on the subject of intention. Because what do you know? A person will not set up one of these conduits, one of these flow lines. He won't set up a conduit unless there is some benefit towards survival in having it set up. Every one of the flow lines you find will have as its source some survival factor strong enough to overweigh the non-survival characteristics of the line, and the only trouble is that the survival factor has generally ceased to exist and the line continues to hold. You take cause and effect. Who would want to be an effect if he could be a cause, particularly if by being cause one is high tone scale, can control a great deal of things, get along well, is happy, cheerful, is not sick, all these things. He could be. Why would he ever want to be an effect? Well, most people met their downfall on the second dynamic because they heard about bodies. And they said, that's very interesting. When you do this and that to a body, you get this sensation. And everybody would say, no. And they'd go out and find a body and find out if this were true, and hook a tractor line on it, and the next thing you know, from being feeling like they're 95 or 200 feet tall or 210 feet tall or something like that, they feel like they're smaller than the body. The body is really something big because the body could handle them its first time. The only reason the body could handle them was it was so darn supercharged with ridges and old accumulated energies and had a thetan in it already that it was quite inexplicable in the way it acted. It didn't act like dolls. Dolls is a much better method of communication. You take a little doll. You can walk. You can talk after a fashion. Generally signals in terms of light. Doesn't talk with sound. He uses his hands manually one way or the other. Very cleverly. Got a little motor in him. Sounds strange, but it's a better body than Homo sapiens. Any day of the week, you dent a fender, you don't get any pain out of it. You take it down to the garage and you get it re-riveted. That would be about all there was to that. Furthermore, you couldn't do any space activity at all if you didn't have a doll. Because a Homo sapiens just can't stand up to this sort of thing. We'll pass over that. Those are questionable points. This other stuff isn't. Now, just opinion. Now, let's take this line then, and let's find out why a person wanted to be affected at all. Why there are things set up on the body. The body wants food, clothing, and shelter. The thetan wants sensation. There is a liability to not having a body, and that liability is not having an identity. A body is just a great, big, expensive identity card. And if you don't have a lot of space, you need identity. You don't have a lot of space, you need identity. If you have a lot of space, you don't need identity very much. So the thetan gets into a crowded area, he figures out that the best thing to have is a very finite identity as a body, therefore it's paying its way off, and furthermore this body has sensation. Why do people go down in tone when the body no longer can be excited very much sexually? They really go to pieces. They don't like that. It's practically the main dividend. Eating, a little entertainment, but you can have better entertainment as a thetan as far as seeing pictures and things like that's concerned, and sex. Freud had something when he said libido theory in 1894. It is very far from a full statement of the situation, but he certainly did pinpoint the one thing that would force a body upon a thetan, and the thetan, not knowing any other track or course and being sort of lost in all that, would sort of feel like he had to track with. He wouldn't have any other way to go about this, so he'd feel that all the pleasure which he felt in the past aesthetically, he would suddenly feel in the sexual band. So sex has a very, very heavy effect upon the thetan. So why does the fellow have the body there anyhow? Well, he'd just as soon have an identification, he'd just as soon have this satisfaction. If he can't have anything else, not knowing anything else, he couldn't have anything else. Knowing other things, he can have other things. It was a point of knowledge, the best choice he could make. He couldn't make a better choice. At the moment, he can make a better choice in the field of knowingness now. All right. So every one of these terminals, you want what terminal of Papa? Believe me, it's good survival to have an older person when you don't quite know how to run the body you've got. That's good survival. Also, you wanted food, clothing, and shelter from him. He meant food, clothing, and shelter. Mama meant food, clothing, and shelter. Other people, the teachers needed, meant education. All of these things. You wanted that line. So the desire, the intention to have a line precedes the line and cements the line into place. When you're processing a preclear, always ask that question. What's the value of this communication? What's the value of that perception? Not just what are its liabilities, because it might be aberratedly valuable to him. To like sex, you need sex about as much as a dog needs five tails. But as far as excitement is concerned, there are much higher dynamic pleasures on the aesthetic band than in the second dynamic. Thetan comes down to and see if he can't reach the upper ones. He can reach the lower ones. So he picks the lower ones. A person desires to be an effect in sex. He doesn't desire to be cause. He desires to be an effect. And so everything will pile up on this confounded sexual engram chain. And sex becomes a hidden energy, but a desired energy. And so it's interesting to find lines that go to sexual partners to be not quite perceptible, to find the sexual partners not quite there, and to find the command lines terribly heavy. Very interesting. One desires to be an effect of pleasure, and so becomes an effect of all command from that source. That source becomes cause, because a person wants to be an effect. So you see, all lines have value, all attention has value. What you want to resolve is optimum attention. You want optimum attention. You don't want a particular change everything for the preclear. But if you're going to change anything for the preclear, you've got to free his attention. And this applies to any process that you do. And any process you're doing is actually, basically, freeing his attention and taking his fixation off his limitations and putting his attention on his tremendously wide abilities and restoring to him those abilities which are wrapped up in the capabilities of theta itself and are represented in your preclear by self-determinism, which you restore. And thank you very much.